Chapter 20. Kennedy's Unbelievable Plot. He deviseth mischief upon his bed. He setteth himself in a way that is not good. He abhorreth not evil. Psalm of David, 1878. Kennedy's unpaid tuition meant very little to Mrs. Eddy. Her concern was for his welfare and progress. She would have been happy to drop the lawsuit against him with the slightest sign of sincerity or repentance on his part, but she received no such sign. Kennedy's trial by jury was scheduled for early November. With his unpaid promissory note and his accomplice, he had set an intricate snare to entrap and discredit, if not destroy, the revelator to this age. Ahrens had once been arrested on a swindling charge. The charge was not pressed, but this record leaves a suspicion that he may have provided Kennedy a contact with the criminal world. However, it was managed. Kennedy, with calculated discretion, stayed in the background, and Ahrens stayed close to the Eddies, in his trusted position, in their household. They, of course, knew nothing of the questionable aspect of his background, while he played his role as a zealous disciple with a nervous desire to do good for Mrs. Eddy. The Eddies were the victims of Kennedy's plot, though at the time Daniel Spofford appeared to be. Spofford was merely a dupe in the incredible scheme. Early in October, he was visited by a burly, evil-looking man named James Sargent, who informed him that he had been hired to murder Dr. Daniel Spofford. He also said that he did not intend to do it, although he had received some of the pay, but had reported the situation to a state police detective named Pinkham. Both Sargent, who had a criminal record, and Pinkham urged Spofford to secrete himself in a house in Cambridgeport, owned by Sargent's brother, which Spofford did on the 15th of October. Very shortly thereafter, an article appeared in the newspapers entitled Mysterious Absence, which began, quote, Dr. D. H. Spofford, the Christian Scientist, has been missing since Tuesday, October 15th, and much alarm for his safety is manifested, end quote. A few days later, another article appeared, stating that Spofford's body had been identified in the morgue. On the 29th of October, Sargent appeared at the door of No. 8 Broad Street, and because of his impertinent remarks, was turned away by Dr. Eddy, who had never before seen the man. What a shock to have this convict admitted to their home a few minutes later by the state detective who arrested Gilbert Eddy and E. J. Ahrens and took them to jail. The thunderbolt aimed at Mrs. Eddy followed. Newspapers blared forth with the statement that Eddy and Ahrens had been arrested for having conspired to murder Spofford, who had by now reappeared. A portion of the letter that Gilbert wrote to Mary from the jail said, "You have doubtless seen the charge, and I need not say so to assure you that it is wholly untrue. I saw D. H. Spofford when the trial was called, and he could not look me in the face. Do not fear for me or Mr. Ahrens. God doeth all things well, and I have enjoyed myself during this experience so far, having as I have the assurance of being accounted worthy to suffer persecution for the Master's sake. Now, Mary, dear, be of good cheer, for though this is not the experience we should have chosen, yet the Master who knoweth better than we hath said it worketh out a more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Yours in love, Gilbert. Inflammatory articles contained in the Boston newspapers with such statements as, quote, all three men emanate from the notorious scientist's home on Broad Street in Lynn, end quote. And, quote, finding that they could not dispose of their rival by any process of law, the Eddy Combination visited Boston and bargained with a Portland street bummer to put Dr. Spofford out of the way, in other words, to murder him in cold blood. End quote. Daniel Spofford was the plaintiff against Eddy and Ahrens at the preliminary hearing in the Boston Municipal Court on the 7th of November. The chief witness was James Sargent, who wove a fantastic tale of falsehoods. The elaborate detail of his story was corroborated by a procession of witnesses, mainly prostitutes from his sister's house of ill fame in that city, and convicts. Not knowing what the accusations were, Dr. Eddy offered no defense to the fantastic story of malicious intrigue told by the motley group of criminals and prostitutes, a story of false accusations against Dr. Eddy, lies from beginning to end. This hearing is reminiscent of the false accusations against Jesus of Nazareth, to which he answered not a word, and of Jesus' hearing in the high priest's palace, where they sought false witness against him. But the plot of 1878 was obviously planned and masterminded, for the preliminary newspaper articles were well-timed and organized. Now the newspapers carried this lurid story of lies, which spread rapidly beyond Boston, and writers and readers alike judged, condemned, and sentenced the Eddies, never having heard them. In the third edition of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy noted the articles about Spofford's disappearance and continued. Then similar articles flashed out from the press, couched in the same covert malice and showing no special sympathy for Mrs. Eddy and Christian Scientists in general, when dropping down to state that Dr. Eddy and E.J. Ahrens had been arrested for conspiring to murder D. Spofford. But the murdered man was alive and well, hidden away. The leading dailies in the city, the Boston Journal, etc., belched forth those damaging articles all over the United States and into Europe before the rebutting testimony could be furnished. Those scurrilous communications were evidently all given to the press at the same time that they might be used simultaneously, knowing that any decent moderation would have prevented respectable papers publishing such slander. The plot was laid so adroitly that my husband's counsel advised him to keep silent and give no clue until he had unearthed the diabolical plot. The purpose of the plotters was evidently to injure the reputation of metaphysical practice, and to embarrass us for money at a time when they hoped to cripple us in the circulation of our book. Mrs. Eddy was embarrassed for money. All of their funds had gone into salvaging the second edition of Science and Health, which had been out only 2 or 3 weeks, when she suddenly had to hire an attorney, and on his advice, detectives. It is not surprising that the Eddies believed Daniel Spofford to be the instigator of the plot, for that too was part of the master plan. Neither is it surprising that the import of the next episode of this drama did not impress Mary at the time, for her thoughts were turning to God in this trial, and her efforts were to help her husband and to raise money for his release. But it was far from coincidental that Richard Kennedy's trial for non-payment of his note to Mrs. Eddy came up on the 8th of November, the day following the preliminary hearing, on the very day that the newspapers were filled with the lurid details of this incredible falsehood. The papers left not the slightest doubt of the defendant's guilt, and vividly portrayed the Eddies as criminals and charlatans. Little wonder that the jury reversed the judge's decision and released Kennedy from his obligation. Colonel Russell Conwell, the Eddies' attorney, was endeavoring to get to the bottom of the plot before the case came up before the grand jury of the Superior Court on the 3rd of December. All the evidence pointed to Spofford as the plotter, and his previous behavior surely did not exonerate him. But from the perspective of years, Mrs. Eddy wrote, quote, "I am glad to say that I now believe Mr. Spofford was wronged and unwittingly drawn by his enemies into that conspiracy," end quote. In the next edition of Science and Health, the chapter exposing Kennedy's malpractice was enlarged from 15 pages entitled Mesmerism to 46 pages titled Demonology. In that chapter, Mrs. Eddy wrote, quote, "Never but one of our students was a voluntary malpractitioner. He has made many others."